Chapter 11. A quote from Major Rorally's Guide to Appeasing the Gods, 2nd edition. It is a grave offense against Malik to keep the belongings of a dead loved one. They belong in the beyond with the god of death and the departed. In the absence of a proper temple, any fire will do. He who does not burn for Malik will be burned by Malik. The next practice sessions of the gauntlet are no more successful than my first, but at least we don't lose another squadmate. Tynan has quit running his mouth since he can't seem to make it up fully either. The buoy balls are his downfall. The chimney is mine. By the 9th and next to last session, I'm ready to set the entire obstacle course on fire. The section of the course that's my downfall is meant to simulate the strength and agility it takes to mount a dragon, and it's becoming clear that my size is going to fuck me. Maybe you can climb up onto my shoulders and then... Rhiannon shakes her head as we study the crevice that's become my nemesis. Then I'm still stuck halfway up, I answer, wiping the sweat from my forehead. Doesn't matter. You can't touch another cadet on the route. Sawyer folds his arms beside me, the tip of his nose now bright red from the high sun. Are you here to squash hopes and dreams, or do you have a suggestion? Rhiannon retorts. Because presentation is tomorrow, so if you've got any bright ideas, now is the time. If I'm going to run to the scribe quadrant, then tonight is the night. My heart clenches against the thought. It's the logical choice, the safe choice. There are only two thoughts stopping me. One, there's no guarantee my mother won't find out. Just because Markham would keep quiet doesn't mean the instructors there will. But most importantly, if I go, if I hide, I'll never know if I'm good enough to make it here. And while I might not survive if I stay, I'm not sure I can live with myself if I leave.
Doria Merrill,
Captain Fitzgibbons says from the dais. Every one of his features is crystal clear, not only because the sun is behind the shade of the clouds, but because I'm closer. Our formation gets tighter with every cadet who falls. According to Brennan and statistics, today will be one of the deadliest for first years. It's presentation day. And in order to get to the flight field, we'll have to climb the gauntlet first. Everything about the Rider's Quadrant is designed to weed out the weak, and today is no exception.
Cameron Dyer,
Captain Fitzgibbons continues to read from the roll. I flinch. His seat was across from mine in dragon kind.
Arvel Palipa.
Imogen and Quinn, both second years, suck in a breath ahead of me. First years aren't the only ones at risk. We're just the most likely to die.
Michael Iverum,
Captain Fitzgibbons closes the roll.
We commend their souls to Malik.
And with that final word, formation breaks.
Second and third years, unless you're on gauntlet duty, head to class. First years, it's time to show us what you've got.
Dane forces a smile and skips right over me as he looks at our squad.
Good luck today.
Imogen tucks an errant strand of pink hair behind her ear and aims a sickly sweet smile right at me.
Hopefully you won't fall
short.
See you later, I reply, lifting my chin. She stares at me with complete loathing for a second, then walks off with Quinn and Sienna, our executive officer, her shoulder-length blonde curls bouncing.
Best of luck,
Heaton, the thickest third year in our squad, with red flames cut and dyed into their hair, taps their heart right over two of their patches, and offers us all a genuine but flat-lipped smile before heading to class. As I stare at their retreating back, I wonder what the circular patch on their upper right arm with water and floating spheres means. I know the triangular patch to the left of that one, with the longsword, means they're not to be messed with on the mat. Since Dane told me about the patch denoting his top secret signet, I've been paying close attention to the patches other cadets have sewn into their uniforms. Most wear them like badges of honor, but I recognize them for what they really are, intelligence that I might one day need to defeat them. I didn't realize Heaton actually knew how to speak. Two lines appear between Riddick's brows.
Maybe they figure they should at least say hi before we're potentially roasted today, Rhiannon says.
Back into formation, Dane orders.
Are you going with us? I ask. He nods, still not looking at me. The eight of us fall into two lines of four, the same as the other squads around us.
Awkward, Rhiannon whispers from my side. He seems kind of pissed at you.
I glance up over Trina's slim shoulders as the breeze whips at the braid I've woven like a crown. It's working a few of Trina's ringlet curls loose, too. He wants something I can't give him. Her eyebrows rise. I roll my eyes.
Not like that. I wouldn't care if it was like that,
she replies under her breath.
He's hot. He has that whole boy next door who can still kick your ass vibe going for him.
I fight a smile because she's right. He so does.
We're the biggest squad, Riddick notes behind us as the squads farthest left, from first wing, file out through the western gate in the courtyard.
What are we down to? Tynan asks. 180?
171. Dane answers. Squads from second wing begin to move, led by their wing leader, which means Zayden is somewhere ahead of us.
My nerves are reserved for the obstacle course, but I can't help but wonder which way his scales will tip today.
For 100 dragons? But what will we? Trina asks, nerves cutting off her words. Stop letting fear leech into your voice. Luca snaps from behind Rhiannon. If the dragons think you're a coward, you'll be nothing but a name tomorrow.
She says, Riddick narrates, inducing more fear.
Shut up, Luca fires back. You know it's true.
Just portray confidence, and I'm sure you'll be fine. I lean forward so our squad mates behind us can't hear me as Third Wing begins to march for the gate.
Thanks, Trina whispers in reply.
Dane's narrowed gaze finally locks on mine, but at least he doesn't call me a liar. There's enough accusation in his eyes that I might as well be tried and convicted of it, though.
Nervous, Ree? I ask, knowing we're about to be called next.
For you? She asks.
Not at all. We've got this.
Oh, I meant about the history test tomorrow, I tease.
There's nothing going on today to panic about.
Now that you mention it, the whole Treaty of a Reef might just be the death of me,
she grins.
Ah, the agreement between Navarre and Krovla for mutually shared airspace for both dragons and griffins over a narrow strip of the Espen Mountains, between Summerton and Draithus,
I recall, nodding.
Your memory is terrifying, she shoots me a smile.
But my memory isn't going to get me up the gauntlet.
Fourth wing, Zayden calls out from somewhere in the distance.
I don't even need to see to know that it's him who gave the order and not his executive officer.
Move out!
We file off. Flame section, then claw, and finally tail. There's a bit of a bottleneck at the gate, but then we're through, walking into the mage-lit dimness of the tunnel that we take every morning to reach the gauntlet. Shadows blanket the edges of the rocky floor along our path. What are the limits of Zayden's power anyway? Could he use shadows to choke out every squad in here? Would he need to rest or recharge after?
Does such a vast power come with any sort of checks or balances?
Dane falls back, so he walks between Rhiannon and me.
Change your mind.
It's barely a whisper. No. I sound way more confident than I feel.
Change your mind.
His hand finds mine, concealed by our tight formation as we descend through the passage.
Please.
I can't, I shake my head, any more than you would leave Kath and run to the scribes yourself.
That's different.
His hand squeezes mine, and I can feel the tension in his fingers, his arm.
I'm a rider.
Well, maybe I am too, I whisper, as light appears ahead. I didn't believe it before, not when I couldn't leave because my mother wouldn't let me. But now I have a choice, and I choose to stay.
Don't be,
he cuts himself off and drops my hand.
I don't want to bury you, Vi.
It's inevitable that one of us will have to bury the other. It's not macabre, just fact. You know what I mean. The light grows into an archway that's 10 feet high, leading us to the base of the gauntlet.
Please don't do this,
Dane begs, not bothering to lower his voice this time, as we emerge into the mottled sunlight. The view is spectacular as always. We're still high on the mountain, thousands of feet above the valley, and the greenery seems to stretch endlessly to the south, with random clusters of squat trees among colorful slopes of wildflowers. My gaze turns to the gauntlet carved into the face of the cliff, and I can't help but follow each obstacle higher and higher until I'm staring at the top of the ridgeline that the maps I've studied show leads into a box canyon, the flight field. I bite my lip as I stare at the break in the tree line. Normally, only riders are allowed on the flight field, except for presentation.
I don't know if I can watch, Dane says, drawing my attention back to his strong face.
His perfectly trimmed beard brackets full lips drawn tight into a frown. Then close your eyes. I have a plan. A shitty one, but it's worth a try.
What changed between parapet and now?
Dane asks again, a wealth of emotions in his eyes that I can't begin to interpret. Well, except the fear. That doesn't need any interpretation.
Me.
An hour later, my feet fly over the spinning posts of the staircase, and I jump to the safety of the gravel path. Third ascent complete. 2 more to go, and I haven't touched a single rope. I swear I can feel Dane staring from the bottom of the course, where Tynan and Luca have yet to start their climb. But I don't look down. There's no time for what he thinks will be one last look, and I can't afford the delay of comforting him when there are still 2 obstacles ahead of me. Which means there's one I haven't even had the chance to practice, the nearly vertical ramp at the end.
You can do it! Rhiannon yells from the top as I reach the chimney structure.
Or you can do us all a favor and fall,
another voice yells. Jack, no doubt. At least it's only been our squad at practice sessions. But every first year can watch now. Either from the base of the course or the edges of the cliff above. I look up at the hollow column I'm supposed to climb, then dart back a few feet along the path.
What are you doing?
Rhiannon shouts as I grab one of the ropes and drag it horizontally across the surface of the cliff, sending pebbles into free fall. It's heavy as hell and protests the stretch, but I manage to get the bottom portion onto the chimney structure. Pulling the rope as tight as it can go, I plant 1 foot on the side of the shaft and give the rope a tug. Then, send up a prayer to Zanal that this is going to work.
Can she do that? Someone snaps.
I'm doing it now. Then I lift my other foot and begin to climb up the chimney, using only the right side, walking up stone and leveraging my weight with the rope, hand over hand. The line slips about halfway up as the rope scrapes over a large boulder, but I quickly take up the slack and keep climbing. My heart thunders in my ears, but it's my hands that are killing me. It feels like flames are eating my palms, and I grit my teeth so I don't cry out. There it is. The top.
The rope barely cuts the corner of the structure now, and I use what's left of my upper body strength to pull myself up, scrambling to my hands and knees on the path.
Hell yes! Riddick yells, hooting from the top. That's our girl!
Get up! Rhiannon shouts. One more! My chest heaves and my lungs ache, but I make it to my feet. I'm on the last ascent, the final path to the flight field. And standing in front of me is a ramp made of wood that juts out 10 feet from the cliff wall, then curves upward like the inside of a bowl, the highest point level with the cliff top 10 feet above. The obstacle is meant to test a cadet's ability to scale a dragon's foreleg and reach its saddle. And I'm too short. But Zayden's words that the right way wasn't the only way have played over and over in my head all night long. By the time the sun rose and chased away the darkness, I had a plan. I only hope I can actually pull it off. I unsheathe my largest dagger from home and wipe away the sweat on my forehead with the back of my dirty palm. Then I forget the agony in my hands, the throbbing of my shoulders, and the twinge in my knee from landing wrong after the pillars. I block out all the pain, lock it behind a wall like I've done my entire life, and focus on the ramp as though my life depends on making it. There's no rope here. There's only one way I'm getting over this. Sheer fucking will. And so I charge, using my speed to my advantage. There's a drum-like sound as my feet beat against the ramp and the incline sharpens. Just because I haven't personally conquered this obstacle doesn't mean I haven't watched my squad mates take it over and over again. I throw my body forward and momentum carries me upward, running up the side of the ramp. I wait until I feel the precious shift, the moment gravity reclaims my body almost 2 feet from the top, and I swing my arm up and slam my dagger into the slick, soft wood of the ramp, and use it to fling myself the last foot upward. A primal scream rips from my throat as my shoulder cries in protest, just as my fingers graze the lip of the edge. I throw my elbow over the top to gain more leverage and pull myself up and over, using the handle of my dagger as a final step before lurching onto the top of the cliff. Not done yet. On my stomach, I turn to face the ramp, then reach over the side and yank my dagger free, sheathing it at my ribs before I stagger to my feet. I made it. Relief sucks the adrenaline straight out of my body. Rhiannon's arms sweep around me, taking my weight as I gasp for air. Riddick hugs my back, squeezing me like I'm the filling of a sandwich as he hollers in happiness. I'd protest, but right now they're all that's keeping me upright.
She can't do that, someone shouts. Yeah, well, she just did, Riddick tosses over his shoulder, loosening his grip on me.
My knees shake, but they hold as I suck in breath after breath.
You made it!
Rhiannon takes my face in her hands, tears filling her brown eyes.
You made it!
Luck, I draw in another breath and beg my galloping heart to slow. And adrenaline.
Cheating!
I turn toward the voice. It's Amber Mavis, the strawberry blonde wing leader from Third Wing, who was Dane's close friend last year. And there's nothing but fury on her face as she charges toward Zayden, who's only a couple of feet away with the roll, recording times with a stopwatch and looking rather bored with it all.
Back the hell up, Mavis, Garrick threatens, the sun flashing off the two swords the curly-haired section leader keeps strapped to his back as he puts his body between Amber and Zayden.
The cheater clearly used foreign materials not once, but twice, Amber yells. It's not to be tolerated. We live by the rules or we die by them.
No wonder she and Dane are so close. They're both in love with the Codex.
I don't take kindly to calling anyone in my section a cheater,
Garrick warns, his massive shoulders blocking her from view as he turns.
And my wing leader will handle any rule breaking in his own wing.
He moves to the side, and I met with Amber's glaring blue eyes.
Sorengale? Zayden asks, arching an eyebrow in obvious challenge, a pen poised over the book.
I notice, not for the first time, that other than his fourth wing and wing leader emblems, he doesn't wear the patches others are so fond of displaying.
I expect the 30-second penalty for using the rope, I answer, my breath steadying. And the knife? Amber's gaze narrows. She's disqualified!
When Zayden doesn't answer, she turns that glare on him.
Surely she's out! You can't tolerate lawlessness within your own wing, Ryerson!
But Zayden's gaze never leaves mine as he silently waits for me to respond.
A rider may only bring to the quadrant the items they can carry, I start. Are you quoting the Codex to me? Amber shouts.
And they shall not be separated from those items, no matter what they may be, I continue.
For once carried across the parapet, they are considered part of their person. Article 3, Section 6, Addendum B.
Her blue eyes flare wide as I glance at her.
That addendum was written to make thievery an executional offense.
Correct, I nod, looking between her and the onyx eyes that see straight through me.
But in doing so, it gave any item carried across the parapet the status of being a part of the rider.
I unsheathe the chipped and battered blade with a sharp bite of pain in my palms.
This isn't a challenge blade. It's one I carried across and therefore considered part of myself.
His eyes flare, and I don't miss the hint of a smirk on that infuriatingly decadent mouth of his. It should be against the Codex to look that good and be so ruthless.
The right way isn't the only way, I use his own words against him.
Zayden holds my gaze. She has you, Amber.
On a technicality?
She still has you. He turns slightly and delivers a look that I never want directed at me.
You think like a scribe,
she barks at me. It's intended as an insult, but I just nod.
I know.
She marches off, and I sheathe the dagger again, letting my hands fall to my sides and closing my eyes as relief shucks the weight from my shoulders. I did it. I passed another test.
Sorengale, Zayden says, and my eyes fly open. You're leaking.
His gaze drops pointedly to my hands, where blood is dripping from my fingertips. Pain erupts, pushing past my mental dam like a raging river at the sight of the mess I've made of my palms. I've shredded them.
Do something about it, he orders.
I nod and back away, joining my squad. Rhiannon helps me cut off the sleeves of my shirt to bandage my hands, and I cheer our last two squad mates up the cliff. We all make it.
Chapter 12. A quote from Colonel Kaori's Field Guide to Dragonkind.
Presentation day is unlike any other. The air is ripe with possibilities, and possibly the stench of sulfur from a dragon who has been offended. Never look a red in the eye. Never back down from a green. If you show trepidation to a brown,
well, just don't.
There are 169 of us by the time the morning is done. And even with my penalty for the rope, we've placed 11th out of the 36 squads for presentation. The piss-inducing parade of cadets before this year's dragons, willing to bond. Anxiety seizes my legs at the thought of walking so close to dragons determined to weed out the weak before threshing. And I suddenly wish we'd placed last. The fastest up the gauntlet was Liam Mari, of course, earning him the gauntlet patch. Pretty sure that guy doesn't know how to take second place. But I wasn't the slowest, and that's good enough for me. The box canyon that makes up the training field is spectacular in the afternoon sun, with miles of autumn-colored meadows and peaks rising on three sides of us as we wait at the narrowest part, the entrance to the valley. At the end, I can make out the line of the waterfall that might be just a trickle of a creek now, but will rush at runoff season. The leaves of the trees are all turning gold, as though someone has brought in a paintbrush with only one color and streaked it across the landscape. And then there are the dragons. Averaging 25 feet tall, they're in a formation of their own, lined up several feet back from the path, close enough to pass judgment on us as we walk by.
"Let's go, second squad. You're up next,"
Garrick says, beckoning us with a wave that makes the rebellion relic on his bared forearm gleam. Dane and the other squad leaders stayed behind. I'm not sure if he'll be thrilled I made it up the gauntlet or disappointed that I bent the rules, but I've never felt more thrilled.
"Into formation,"
Garrick orders, his tone all business, which doesn't surprise me given that his leadership style is more mission first, niceties last. Go figure, he seems to be so close to Zayden. Unlike Zayden, though, the right side of his uniform has a neat line of patches proclaiming him Flame's section leader, as well as more than 5 patches advertising his skill with a multitude of weapons. We comply, and Rhiannon and I end up near the back this time. There's a sound like rushing wind in the distance that stops as quickly as it starts, and I know someone else has been found lacking. Garrick's hazel eyes skim over us.
"Hopefully Atos has done his job, so you know that it's a straight walk down the meadow. I'd recommend staying at least 7 feet apart."
"In case one of us gets torched," Riddick mutters from ahead.
"Correct, Riddick. Cluster if you want. Just know if a dragon finds disfavor with one of you, it's likely to burn the whole lot to weed one out,"
Garrick warns, holding our gazes for a beat.
"Also, remember you're not here to approach them, and if you do, you won't be making it back to the dormitory tonight."
"Can I ask a question?"
Luca says from the front row. Garrick nods, but the ticking of his jaw says he's annoyed. I can't blame him. Luca annoys the shit out of me, too. It's her constant need to tear everyone down that makes most of us keep our distance.
"Third squad, tail section of fourth wing already went through, and I talked to some of the cadets."
"That's not a question."
He lifts his brows. Yep, he's annoyed.
"Right, it's just that they said there's a feather tail?"
Her voice pitches upward.
"A feather tail?"
Tynan sputters from directly in front of me.
"Who the hell would ever want to bond a feather tail?"
I roll my eyes and Rhiannon shakes her head.
"Professor Kiori never told us there would be a feather tail,"
Sawyer says.
"I know because I memorized every single dragon he showed us. All 100 of them."
"Well, guess there's 101 now,"
Garrick replies, looking at us as if we're children he'd like to be rid of before glancing back over his shoulder at the entrance to the valley.
"Relax. Feathertails don't bond. I can't even remember the last time one has been seen outside the veil. It's probably just curious. You're up. Stay on the path. You walk up, you wait for the entire squad, you walk back down. It really doesn't get any easier than this from here on out, kids. So if you can't follow those simple instructions, then you deserve whatever happens in there."
He turns and heads over to a path before the canyon wall where the dragons are perched. We follow, breaking away from the crowd of first years. The breeze bites at my bare shoulders from where we ripped my sleeves for bandages. But we got the blood flow stopped at my hands.
"They're all yours,"
Garrick says to the quadrant's senior wing leader, a woman I've seen a few times in battle brief murmuring to Zayden. Her uniform still has her signature spikes on the shoulders, but this time they're gold and look sharp as hell, like she wanted to throw in a little extra badass today. She nods and dismisses him.
"Single file."
We all shuffle into a line. Rhiannon is at my back and Tynan just ahead of me, which means I'll be treated to his commentary the whole time, no doubt.
Awesome.
"Talk," the senior wing leader says, folding her arms across her chest.
"Nice day for a presentation," Riddick jokes.
"Not to me."
The senior wing leader narrows her gaze on Riddick,
then motions to the line of cadets before her.
Talk to your nearby squad mates while you're on the path, as it will help the dragons get a sense of who you are and how well you play with others. There's a correlation between bonded cadets and level of chatter.
And now I want to switch places.
Feel free to look at the dragons, especially if they're showing off their tails. But I would abstain from eye contact if you value your life. If you come across a scorch mark, just make sure nothing's currently on fire before continuing along.
She pauses long enough for that last bit of advice to sink in, then adds,
"See you after your stroll."
With a sweep of her hand, the senior wing leader steps to the side, revealing the dirt path that leads through the center of the valley, and up ahead, sitting so perfectly still that they might be gargoyles, are the 101 dragons who have decided to bond this year. The line starts, and we give one another the suggested 7 feet before following. I'm hyper aware of every step as I walk down the path. The trail is hard beneath my boots, and there's a definite lingering odor of sulfur. We pass a trio of red dragons first. Their talons are almost half my size.
"I can't even see their tails," Tynan shouts from in front of me. "How are we supposed to know what breed they are?"
I keep my eyes locked at the level of their massive, muscled shoulders as we walk by.
"We're not supposed to know what breed they are," I respond.
"Fuck that," he says over his shoulder. "I need to figure out which one I'm going to approach during threshing."
"Pretty sure this little walk is so they can decide," I retort.
"Hopefully one of them will decide you don't get to make it to threshing,"
Rhiannon says, her voice quiet so it barely reaches me. I laugh as we approach a set of browns, both slightly smaller than my mother's Aimser, but not by much.
"They're a little bigger than I thought they would be," Rhiannon says, her voice rising. "Not that I didn't see the ones at Parapet, but..."
I look over my shoulder to see her wide gaze flickering between the path and the dragons. She's nervous.
"So, do you know if you're having a niece or nephew?"
I ask, continuing to walk forward past a handful of oranges.
"What?" she answers. "I've heard some of the healers can make pretty good guesses once a woman is further along in her pregnancy."
"Oh, no," she says. "No clue. Though I'm kind of hoping she'll have a girl. I guess I'll find out once we finish the year and can write our families."
"That's a bullshit rule," I say over my shoulder, lowering my gaze immediately when I accidentally make eye contact with one of the oranges.
"Breathe normally, swallow the fear.
Fear and weakness will get me killed. And since I'm already bleeding, the odds aren't exactly in my favor here."
"You don't think it encourages loyalty to the wing?"
Rhiannon asks.
"I think I'm just as loyal to my sister whether I've had a letter from her or not," I counter. "There are bonds that can't be broken."
"I'd be loyal to your sister too," Tynan says, turning around and grinning as he walks backward. "She's one hell of a rider. And that ass. I saw her right before Parapet, and damn, Violet, she's hot."
We pass by another set of reds, then a single brown and a pair of greens.
"Turn around," I make the spinning motion with my finger. "Mira would eat you for breakfast, Tynan."
"I'm just wondering how one of you got all the good traits and the other looks like she got the leftovers."
His gaze skims down my body. Full body shudder gross.
"You're an asshole," I flip him the middle finger.
"Just saying. Maybe I'll write a letter of my own once we get privileges."
He turns and continues walking.
"A nephew would be good,"
Rhiannon says, like the conversation was never interrupted.
"Boys aren't too bad."
"My brother was awesome, but he and Dane are my only experience with growing up around little boys."
We pass more dragons, and my breathing starts to settle. The smell of sulfur disappears. Or maybe I've just grown accustomed to it. They're close enough to torch us. The half-dozen singe marks testify to that.
but I can't hear them breathing or feel it either.
Though I think Dane was probably a little more rule-abiding than most kids. He likes order and pretty much detests anything that doesn't fit neatly into his plan. He's probably going to give me shit about how I got up the gauntlet, just like Amber Mavis did. We pass the halfway mark and continue.
Is the way the dragons stare at us scary as hell?
Absolutely.
But they want to be here the same as we do, so at least I hope they'll be judicious with their firepower.
Why didn't you tell me about the rope plan? Or the dagger?
Rhiannon asks, hurt pitching her tone.
You can trust me, you know.
I didn't think of it until yesterday, I answer, taking the time to look over my shoulder so I can see her.
And if it didn't work, I didn't want you to be an accomplice. You have a real future here, and I refuse to bring you down with me if I didn't make it. I don't need you to protect me.
I know, but it's just what friends do, Rhee. I shrug as we walk by a trio of browns, the soft crunch of our boots on the dark gravel path the only sound for a few minutes.
You keeping any other secrets up there?
Rhiannon eventually asks. Guilt settles in my stomach when I think of Zayden and his meeting with the other marked ones.
I think it's impossible to know everything there is to know about someone.
I feel like shit, but keep from lying at least. She snorts a laugh.
If that wasn't skirting the question, how about this? Promise me that if you need help, you'll let me give it to you.
A smile spreads across my face despite the terrifying greens we're walking by.
How about this? I toss over my shoulder. I promise that if I need help you're capable of giving, I'll ask. But only,
I hold up my forefinger,
if you promise the same.
Deal, she smiles wide.
You guys done bonding back there? Tynan sneers. Because we're almost to the end of the line, if you haven't noticed.
He pauses in the middle of the path, his gaze swinging right.
And I still can't figure out which one I'm going to choose.
With arrogance like that, I'm sure any dragon would feel lucky to share your mind for the rest of your life.
I pity whatever dragon, if any, chooses him. The rest of the squad is gathered ahead of us, facing our direction at the end of the path, but all their attention is focused to the right. We pass the last brown dragon, and I inhale sharply.
What the hell? Tynan stares. Keep walking,
I order, but my gaze is transfixed. Standing at the end of the line is a small, golden dragon. Sunlight reflects off its scales and horns as it stands to its full height, flicking a feathered tail around the side of its body. The feather tail. My jaw drops as I take in the sharp teeth and quick darting movements of its head as it studies us. At its full height, it's probably only a few feet taller than I am, like a perfect miniature of the brown next to it. I walk straight into Tynan's back and startle. We've reached the end of the path, where the rest of the squad has been waiting.
Get off me, Sorengale, Tynan hisses and shoves me back. Who the hell would bond that thing?
My chest tightens. They can hear you, I remind him.
It's fucking yellow,
Luca points right at the dragon, disgust curling her lip.
So not only is it obviously too small to carry a rider in battle, but it's not even powerful enough to be a real color.
Maybe it's a mistake, Sawyer says quietly. Maybe it's a baby orange?
It's full grown, Rhiannon argues. There's no way the other dragons allow a baby to bond. No human alive has ever seen a baby.
It's a mistake, all right.
Tynan looks at the golden one and scoffs.
You should totally bond it, Sorengale. You're both freakishly weak. It's a match made in heaven.
It looks powerful enough to burn you to death,
I counter, heat flushing my cheeks. He called me weak, and not just in front of our squad, but in front of them. Sawyer lunges between us, grabbing Tynan's collar.
Don't
ever say that about a squadmate, especially not in front of unbonded dragons.
Let him go. He's just saying what we're all thinking,
Luca mutters. I turn slowly to stare at her, my mouth slightly agape. Is this what happens to us the second we're out of hearing range of any superior cadet? We turn on one another?
What?
She gestures to my hair.
Half your hair is silver and you're petite,
she finishes with a fake smile.
Golden and small. You match.
Trina puts her hand on Sawyer's arm.
Don't make a mistake in front of them. We don't know what they'll do, she whispers.
And now we're grouped up. I shuffle backward a little as Sawyer drops Tynan's collar.
Someone should kill it before it bonds,
Tynan sputters. And for the first time in my life, I actually want to kick someone while they're down, and keep kicking until they stay down.
It's just going to get its rider killed, and it's not like we get a choice if it wants to bond us.
You're just picking up on that now, are you?
Riddick shakes his head.
We should go back,
Pryor says, his gaze darting around the group.
I mean, if you think we should, we don't have to, of course.
For once in your life,
Tynan says, pushing past Pryor to start down the path.
Make a damn decision, Pryor.
We take off one by one, leaving the suggested space between us. Rhiannon goes before me this time, and Riddick follows behind, with Luca bringing up the rear.
They're pretty incredible, aren't they?
Riddick says, and the wonder in his voice makes me smile.
They are, I agree.
They're honestly a little underwhelming after seeing that blue at parapet.
Luca's voice carries all the way to Rhiannon, who turns around with an incredulous look.
Like this isn't stressful enough without you insulting them?
Rhi asks. I need to defuse this quickly.
I mean, it could be worse. We could be walking past a line of wyvern, right?
Oh, please, Violet, do give us one of your nervous babble story times,
Luca says sarcastically.
Let me guess, wyvern or some elite squad of griffin riders created because of something we did at a battle only you can manage to remember with your scribe brain?
You don't know what a wyvern is? Rhi asks, then begins walking again.
Didn't your parents tell you bedtime stories, Luca?
Do enlighten me, Luca drawls. I roll my eyes, continuing along the path.
They're folklore, I say over my shoulder. Kind of like dragons, but bigger, with 2 feet instead of 4. A mane of razor-sharp feathers streaking down their necks, and a taste for humans. Unlike dragons, who think we're a little gamey. My mom used to love telling my sister Reagan and me that we'd be plucked right off the front porch by one if we talked back. And their eerie-eyed venin riders would take us prisoner if we took treats we weren't allowed to have.
Rhi says, flashing a grin at me. And I can't help but notice that her step is lighter.
Mine is too. I notice each dragon as we pass, but my heartbeat steadies. My dad used to read me those fables every night, I tell her. And I seriously asked him one time if Mom was going to turn into a venin because she could channel.
Rhiannon chuckles as we walk by a set of glaring reds.
Did he tell you people supposedly only turn into venin if they channel directly from the source? He did, but it was after my mom had a really long night while we were stationed near the eastern border, and her eyes were bloodshot red, so I freaked out and started shrieking.
I can't help but smile at the memory.
She took my books of fables away for a month because the outpost guards all came running, and I was hiding behind my brother who couldn't stop laughing, and, well, it was a mess.
I keep my eyes front and center as a large orange sniffs the air when I pass. Rhiannon's shoulders shake with laughter.
I wish we'd had a book like that. I seriously think Mom just altered the stories to scare us whenever we stepped out of line. That sounds like some border village nonsense, Luca scoffs. Venin, wyvern,
Anyone with a modicum of education knows that our wards stop all magic that isn't channeled directly from dragons. They're stories, Luca, Rhys says over her shoulder, and I can't help but notice how much ground we've covered. Prior, you can walk a little faster if you want up there.
Maybe we should slow down and take our time, Prior suggests from ahead of Rhiannon, rubbing his palms along the sides of his uniform.
Or, I guess we can go faster if we want to get out of here.
A red steps out of line, putting one claw forward toward us, and my stomach drops to the ground from the weight of the dread filling my entire body.
No, 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 I whisper, freezing in place, but it's too late. The red opens its mouth, exposing sharp, glistening fangs, and fire erupts along the sides of its tongue, streaming through the air and into the path ahead of Rhiannon. She yells in shock. Heat blasts the front of my face. Then, it's over. The scent of sulfur and burned grass, burned something, fills my lungs, and I see a charred patch of ground in front of Rhiannon that hadn't been there before.
Are you all right, Rhi? I call forward.
She nods, but the movement is hurried and jerky. Prior's dead. My mouth waters like I'm going to vomit, but I breathe in through my nose and out through my mouth until the feeling passes.
Keep walking,
Sawyer shouts from farther down the path.
It's all right, Rhi. You just have to...
She just has to what? Walk over his corpse? Is there a corpse?
Fire's out, Rhiannon says over her shoulder.
I nod because there's nothing I can say to reassure her.
Holy shit, are we insignificant.
She walks forward and I follow, maneuvering around the pile of ash that used to be Prior.
Oh my gods, the smell, Luca complains.
Could you please have some level of decency? I snap, turning around to level a glare at her. But Riddick's face makes me pause. His eyes are as wide as saucers and his mouth hangs open.
Violet!
It's a whisper, and I wonder briefly if I heard him as much as I saw the word forming on his lips.
Vi!
A warm huff of steam blows against the back of my neck. My heart thunders, the beat increasing erratically as I take what might be my last breath and turn toward the line of dragons. The golden eyes of not one, but two greens meet mine, consuming my field of vision.
Oh, fuck.
To approach a green dragon, lower your eyes in supplication and wait for their approval. That's what I read, right? I drop my gaze as one chuffs another breath at me. It's hot and appallingly wet, but I'm not dead yet, so that's a plus. The one on the right chortles deep in its throat. Wait, is that the sound of approval I'm looking for? Shit, I wish I'd asked Mira. Mira. She's going to be devastated when she reads the rolls. I lift my head and suck in a sharp breath. They're even closer. The one on the left nudges my hands with its giant nose, but I somehow stand my ground, rocking back on my heels to keep from falling over. Greens are the most reasonable. I cut my hands climbing the obstacle course. I lift my palms like they can see through the black fabric binding my wounds. The one on the right sets its nose right at my breasts and chuffs again.
What the hell?
It inhales, making that noise in its throat, and the other shoves its nose into my ribs, making me raise my arms just in case they feel like taking a little nibble.
Violet, Rhiannon whisper shouts. I'm all right, I call back, then wince, hoping I didn't just seal my fate by screaming in their ears.
Another chuff, another chortle, like they're talking to each other as they sniff me. The one under my arm moves its nostril to my back and sniffs again.
Realization hits as I choke out a tight, surreal laugh.
Oh, you smell tiny, don't you? I ask quietly. They both draw back,
just far enough for me to look them in their golden eyes, but they keep their jaws shut, giving me the courage to keep talking. I'm Mira's sister, Violet. Slowly lowering my arms, I run my hands over my snot-covered vest and the armor carefully sewn into it. She collected tiny scales after he'd shed them last year and had them shrunk down so she could sew them into the vest to help keep me safe. The one on the right blinks. The one on the left sticks its nose in again, sniffing loudly. The scales have saved me a few times, I whisper, but no one else knows they're in there, just Mira and Tiny. They both blink at me, and I lower my gaze, bowing my head because it feels like the thing to do. Professor Kaori taught us every way to approach a dragon and exactly zero ways to disengage one. Step by step, they retreat until I see them take up their places in line in my peripherals, and I finally raise my head. Taking several deep breaths, I try to lock my muscles to keep from trembling. Violet! Rhiannon is only a few feet away, a look of terror in her eyes. She must have been right behind their heads. I'm fine, I force a smile and nod. I have dragon scale armor under the vest, I whisper. They smell my sister's dragon.
If she wants trust, there it is.
Please don't tell anyone. I won't, she whispers. You're all right? Other than having a few years of my life shaved off? I laugh. The sound is shaky, bordering on hysteria. Let's get out of here, she swallows, her gaze darting toward the line of dragons. Good idea. She turns and walks back to her place. And once there's 15 feet between us, I follow.
I think I just shat myself, Riddick says, and my laughter only pitches higher as we move through the field.
Honestly, I thought they were going to eat you, Luca remarks.
Me too, I admit.
I wouldn't have blamed them, she continues.
You're insufferable, Riddick calls back. I focus on the path and keep walking.
What? She's obviously our weakest link after Pryor, and I don't blame them for snuffing him out, she argues. He could never make a decision, and no one wants someone like that as their rider.
A blast of heat singes my back and I halt.
Don't be Riddick. Don't be.
Guess the dragons think she's insufferable too, Riddick mutters.
Our squad is down to 6 first years. Chapter 13.
A quote from Colonel Kaori's Field Guide to Dragonkind.
There is nothing quite as humbling or as awe-inspiring as witnessing threshing.
For those who live through it, anyway.
October 1st is always threshing. Monday, Wednesday, or Sunday. It doesn't matter where it falls on any given year. On the 1st of October, the first-year cadets of the Riders Quadrant enter the bowl-shaped forested valley to the southwest of the Citadel and pray they come out alive. I will not die today. I didn't bother eating this morning, and I pity Riddick, who's currently heaving up the contents of his stomach against a tree to my right. A sword is strapped to Rhiannon's back, the hilt jostling against her spine as she bounces, stretching her arms across her chest one at a time.
Remember to listen here, Professor Kaori says from in front of the 147 of us here, tapping his chest. If a dragon has already selected you, they'll be calling.
He thumps his chest again.
So pay attention to not just your surroundings, but your feelings, and go with them.
He grimaces.
And if your feelings are telling you to go in the other direction, listen to that, too.
Which one are you going for? Rhiannon asks quietly. I don't know. I shake my head, but can't ditch the feeling of absolute failure in my chest. At this point, Mira knew she wanted to seek out Tiny.
You memorized the cards, right? She asks, lifting her brows. So you know what's out there?
Yes. I just don't feel connected to any of them. which is better than feeling connected to a dragon another rider has their eye on, I have no desire to fight to the death today.
Dane tried talking me into a brown.
Dane lost his vote when he tried talking you into leaving, she counters.
There's a lot of truth to that. I've only talked to him once in the past 2 days since presentation, and he tried to get me to run within the first 5 minutes. We've only seen professors this morning, but I know the second and third year riders are scattered throughout the valley in order to observe.
What about you? She grins.
I'm thinking about that green, the one closest to me when they all got up close and personal with you.
Well, it didn't eat you, so that's a promising start. I smile despite the fear racing through my veins.
I think so too.
She links her arm with mine and I focus back on what Professor Kaori is telling us.
If you go in groups, you're more likely to be incinerated than bonded, Professor Kaori argues with someone near the center of the valley. The scribes have run the statistics. You're better off on your own.
And what if we aren't chosen by dinner?
A man with a short beard to my left asks.
Looking past him, I catch Jack Barlow running a finger across his neck at me.
So original. Then Orin and Tynan flank his sides.
So much for squad loyalty.
It's everyone for themselves today.
If you're not chosen by nightfall, there's a problem, Professor Kaori responds, his thick mustache turned down at the ends. You'll be brought out by a professor or senior leadership. So don't give up and think we've forgotten about you.
He checks his pocket watch.
Remember to spread out and use every foot of this valley to your advantage. It's 9, which means they should be flying in any minute now. The only other words I have for you are good luck.
He nods, sweeping his gaze over the crowd of us with such intensity that I know he'll be able to recreate this moment in a projection. Then he leaves, marching up the hill to our right and disappearing into the trees. My mind whirls. It's time. I'll either leave this forest as a rider, or likely never leave.
Be careful,
Rhiannon pulls me into a hug, her braids swinging over my shoulder as she tightens her arms around me.
You too,
I squeeze her back, and am immediately swept into another pair of arms.
Don't die, Riddick orders.
That's our only goal. As what's left of our squad separates, each heading in our own direction, like we've been flung apart by centrifugal motion, at the mercy of a spinning wheel.
Guessing by the position of the sun, it's been at least a couple of hours since the dragons flew overhead, landing in the valley in a succession that sounded like thunder and making the earth shake. I've come across 2 greens, a brown, 4 oranges, and my heart stumbles and my feet freeze to the forest floor as a red steps into my field of vision, its head just under the canopy of enormous trees. This is not my dragon. I'm not sure how I know, but I do. I hold my breath, trying not to make a sound as its head sweeps right, then left, and my gaze plummets to the ground as I bow my head. For the last hour or so, I've seen dragons launch into the air with a cadet, now a rider, on their back. But I've also seen more than a couple of plumes of smoke, and I have no desire to be one of those. The dragon huffs a breath, then continues along its path, its club tail flicking upward and catching one of the lower-hanging branches. The limb falls to the ground with a monstrous crash, and only after the footsteps recede do I finally raise my head. I've now come across every color of dragon, and none of them has spoken to me or given me the sense of connection we're reportedly supposed to feel. My stomach sinks. What if I'm one of the cadets who's destined to never become a rider? One who's thrown back time and again to restart first year until eventually something puts me on the death roll? Has this all been for nothing? The thought is too heavy to carry. Maybe
If I could just see the valley, then I'd get a feeling like Professor Kaori was talking about. I spot the nearest climbable tree and get to work, scaling branch after branch. Pain radiates from my hands, but I don't let it distract me, the bark catching the wraps that still cover my palms. Now that's an annoyance that makes me pause every few feet and pull the cloth free of the bark. Pretty sure the higher branches aren't going to support my weight, so I stop about 3/4 to the top and survey the immediate area. There are a few greens in plain sight to my left, standing out against the fall foliage. Oddly enough, this is the one time of year when oranges, browns, and reds have the highest chance of blending in. I watch the trees for movement and spot a couple more directly south, but there's no pull, no aching need to head in that direction, which probably means those aren't mine either. Relief hits me embarrassingly hard when I count at least half a dozen first years wandering aimlessly. I shouldn't be so happy that they haven't found their dragons either, but at least I'm not the only one, which gives me hope. There's a clearing to the north, and my eyes narrow as a flash, like a mirror, catches the sun. Or, like a golden dragon. Guess the little feathertail is still out here appeasing its curiosity. But I'm apparently not going to find my dragon up a tree, so I climb down carefully and as quietly as possible. My feet hit the ground just before voices approach, and I tuck myself against the trunk to hide from being seen. We're not supposed to be in groups.
I'm telling you, I think I saw it headed this way.
It's a cocky voice I immediately recognize as Tynan.
You'd better be right, because if we just hiked all the way the fuck over here just to find nothing, I'm going to run you through.
My stomach twists. It's Jack. No one else's voice has that physical effect on me, not even Zayden's.
You sure we shouldn't be spending our time looking for our own dragons instead of hunting the freak down?
Recognition tickles the edges of my mind, but I lean out from my hiding place just to be sure.
Yep, it's Orin.
I dart back behind the cover of the tree as the trio passes, each strapped with a deadly sword. There are 9 daggers tucked against my body in various places, so it's not like I'm unarmed, but I feel tragically disadvantaged by my inability to wield a sword effectively. They're just too damned heavy. Wait, what did they say they were doing? Hunting?
It's not like our dragons are going to bond any other riders,
Jack snaps. They'll wait for us.
This has to be done. That scrawny one is going to get someone killed. We have to take it out.
Nausea swirls in my stomach, and my fingernails bite into my palms. They're going to try and kill the little golden one.
If we get caught, we're fucked,
Orin comments. That's an understatement. I can't imagine dragons would take kindly to killing one of their own, but they seem to be focused on culling the weak from the herd in our species, so it's not a stretch to imagine they'd do the same with their own.
Then you'd better shut your mouth so no one hears us,
Tynan counters, his voice rising in that mocking tone that makes me want to punch him in the face.
It's for the best,
Jack argues, his tone dropping.
It's unrideable, a certified freak. And you know feathertails are useless in combat. They refuse to fight.
His voice fades as they walk farther away, headed north, toward the clearing.
Shit,
I mutter under my breath, even though the assholes are out of hearing range by now. No one knows anything about feathertails, so I don't know where Jack is getting his information. But I don't have time to focus on his assumptions right now. I have no way of contacting Professor Kaori, and there hasn't even been a hint that the senior riders are watching us, so I can't count on them to stop this madness either. The golden dragon should be able to breathe fire, but what if it can't? There's a chance they won't find it, but
shit, I can't even convince myself of that one.
They're headed the right way, and that dragon is pretty much a shiny beacon. They'll find it. My shoulders sag, and I sigh at the sky, blowing out a frustrated breath. I can't just stand here and do nothing. You can get there first and warn it.
Solid plan. And way better than option 2, where I'd be forced to take on 3 armed men with at least a combined 200 pounds on me.
I keep my footsteps silent and race across the forest floor at a slightly different angle than Jack's little posse. Thankful I grew up playing hide-and-seek with Dane in the woods. This is one area of expertise I can confidently claim. They've got a head start on me, and the clearing is closer than I realized. So I kick up my speed, my gaze darting between the leaf-covered path I've chosen and where I think, scratch that, where I know they are toward the left. I can make out their lumbering shapes in the distance. I hear a pop, and the ground falls out from under me, then rushes for my face. My hands fly out to brace myself a second before I slam into the forest floor. I bite into my lower lip to keep from crying out as my ankle screams. Popping isn't good. It's never good. Glancing back, I curse at the fallen branch hidden by fall foliage that's just wrecked my ankle. Shit. Block the pain. Block it. But there's no mental trick to keep the shooting agony from turning my stomach as I drag myself to my knees and rise carefully, keeping my weight on my left ankle. There's nothing to do but limp the final dozen feet to the clearing, gritting my teeth the whole way. The tinge of satisfaction that I beat Jack here is almost enough to make me smile. The meadow is big enough for 10 dragons, ringed by several large trees, but the golden one stands alone in the center, like it's trying to get a suntan. It's just as beautiful as I remember, but unless it can breathe fire, it's a sitting duck. You have to get out of here, I hiss from the cover of the trees, knowing it should be able to hear me. They're going to kill you if you don't leave. Its head pivots toward me, then tilts at an angle that makes my own neck hurt.
Yes, I whisper loudly. You, Goldie.
It blinks its golden eyes and swishes its tail. You have to be fucking kidding me.
Go! Run! Fly!
I shoo at it. Then remember it's a god's damned dragon capable of shredding me with its claws alone, and I drop my hands.
This is not going well. It's going the opposite of well. The trees rustle from the south, and Jack steps into the clearing, his sword swaying in his right hand. A step later, he's flanked by Orin and Tynan, both their weapons drawn. Shit, I mutter, my chest tightening. This is now officially going horribly. The golden dragon's head snaps in their direction, a low growl rumbling in its chest.
We'll make it painless, Jack promises, like that makes the murder acceptable. Scorch them, I whisper shout, my heart pounding as they draw closer.
But the dragon doesn't, and somehow, I'm certain in the marrow of my bones that it can't. Other than its teeth, it's defenseless against 3 trained warriors. It's going to die just because it's smaller, weaker than the other dragons. Just like me.
My throat closes.
The dragon backs up, its growl growing louder as it bares its teeth. Stomach pitching. I have that parapet feeling again. Whatever I do next has overwhelming odds of ending my life. And yet I'm still going to do it because this is wrong.
You can't do this!
I take the first step into the shin-high grass, and Jack's attention swings my way. My ankle has a heartbeat of its own, and agony streaks up my spine, chattering my teeth as I force my weight onto my ruined joint so they won't see me limping. They can't know I'm hurt, or they'll just attack faster. One at a time, I stand a chance of holding them off long enough for the dragon to escape, but together, don't think about it.
Ho-ho, look, Jack grins, pointing his sword my way. We can take out both the weakest links at the same time.
He looks at his friends and laughs, pausing their advance. Each step hurts worse than the last, but I make it to the center of the clearing, putting myself between Jack's group and the golden dragon.
Been waiting a long time for this, Sorengale.
He walks forward slowly.
If you can fly, now would be a good time,
I shout over my shoulder at the small dragon, drawing two daggers from the sheaths at my ribs. The dragon chuffs. So helpful.
You can't kill a dragon, I try reasoning, shaking my head at the trio, fear lacing my veins with adrenaline.
Sure we can,
Jack shrugs, but Oren looks a little uncertain, so I pin my gaze on him as they spread out slightly about a dozen feet away, setting up the perfect formation for an attack.
You can't, I say directly to Oren. It goes against everything we believe in.
He flinches. Jack doesn't.
Letting something so weak, so incapable of fighting, live is against our beliefs,
Jack shouts, and I know he's not just talking about the dragon.
You're going to have to get through me then.
My heart thunders against my ribs as I raise my daggers, flipping one to pinch the tip so I'm ready to throw and measuring the 20 or so feet separating me from my attackers.
I don't really consider that a problem,
Jack snarls. They all lift their swords, and I draw a deep breath, readying myself to fight. This isn't the mat. There are no instructors, no yielding, nothing to stop them slaughtering me. Slaughtering us.
I would strongly recommend you rethink your actions.
A voice. His voice. Demands from across the field to my right. My scalp prickles as each of our heads swivel in his direction. Zayden is leaning against the tree, his arms folded across his chest, and behind him, watching with narrowed golden eyes, her fangs exposed, is Sigale, his terrifying navy blue dagger tail.